Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again, after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
They both recall frequent fights. They both recall Mr. O'Keefe trying multiple times to break up with the defendant, asking her to leave the house, the defendant refusing to leave the house. His niece, Kaylee, John tried to defuse, he tried to walk away, and the defendant would follow each time. During each argument, they both indicated that Mr. O'Keefe had told the defendant that the relationship had run its course, similar to language within the text messages you have between the defendant and Mr. O'Keefe. That Mr. O'Keefe was sick of arguing, again, mirroring those text messages from January 28th, leading up into going out to see if McCarthy is eventually the waterfall, and the defendant killing Mr. O'Keefe. In the early morning hours of January 29th. We have the testimony in regard to the ring camera. Kaylee indicated in her testimony that John had had that for about a year. So during the course of 2 years or so of the relationship with the defendant, he got it while he was dating the defendant. The defendant had the security code to the garage. Neither of the kids had access to the camera. Trooper Guarino checked the laptop and the desktop that were left after the defendant did the quick cleanup upstairs with her father, upstairs in the home. Neither of those devices had access to the ring cameras. John had access on his phone. The defendant indicates, if you recall, in some of those text messages in regard to the romantic kiss that she placed on Mr. Higgins earlier on January, whatever it was, during the Patriots game. Mr. Higgins and Mr. Jackson was indicating weren't very good friends with Mr. O'Keefe, but had been invited over to his home for a Patriots game in which time the defendant escorted Mr. Higgins out of the garage and placed a romantic kiss on him. But during those text messages, when they're talking about that, if you recall, the defendant is saying something or joking about something that Mr. O'Keefe had been looking at the videos and had been asking her if there was something going on with her and Mr. Higgins. And what was her response to that? I know where the cameras are. There are only two videos missing from that ring system. One being the defendant getting to Mr. O'Keefe's house after murdering him, and the other when the defendant is showing Ms. McCabe and Ms. Roberts the broken taillight, both of which, both Ms. McCabe and Ms. Roberts testified as having occurred. No video. The variety of stories that the defendant tells on the morning of January 29th. There are text messages and voicemails from the defendant to Mr. O'Keefe, 53 phone calls from 12:33 a.m. to 6:03 a.m. Zero phone calls to 911. The defendant calls Katie Camerano. The defendant calls her parents at 1:18 in the morning, 4:38 in the morning, 4:42 in the morning. The call then from Kaylee's phone to Ms. McCabe, because the defendant didn't have Ms. McCabe's phone number. Both Kaylee and Ms. McCabe indicate that the defendant initially indicates or says that she got into a fight with Mr. O'Keefe and left him at the waterfall. From this information, Ms. McCabe then testifies she starts to call Julie Albert, because Chris Albert, Julie Albert, they live close by the waterfall. Maybe that's where he went. As the phone is ringing, and this is a phone call that both Ms. Albert and Ms. McCabe testify was never answered. As the phone is ringing, her husband, Matthew McCabe, reminds her that they saw the defendant and Mr. O'Keefe in the car outside of 34 Fairview. So she hangs up. During this call, or during these subsequent calls, the defendant indicates to Ms. McCabe, maybe I hit him, did I hit him? She then calls Ms. Roberts at 5 a.m. on the dot, indicates John's dead, hangs up the phone, calls back a minute later, indicates that Mr. O'Keefe was now hit by a plow and that he's dead, and then indicates further that she's drunk and doesn't remember. She tells Ms. McCabe about the cracked taillight before they even get in the vehicle and go anywhere, as you recall the testimony of Matthew McCabe, indicating that he has some concerns about them driving around in a vehicle with a damaged taillight in the middle of a blizzard. Ms. Roberts' testimony that she saw the broken taillight in the driveway at Ms. McCabe's house, and that it was consistent with what she observed in the photographs that were shown to her of it later in the Sallyport at the Canton Police Department garage when the search warrant is executed on February 1st. You have the text messages between the defendant and Laura Sullivan from January 29th, in which the defendant indicates to Laura Sullivan that John is dead, indicates that we found him in the snow at 5 a.m. And every indication is that he was found in the snow by the defendant, Ms. McCabe, and Ms. Roberts around 6 a.m. 5 a.m. would be about an hour before. 5 a.m. would be between that time of where the defendant is unaccounted for heading in the direction of 34 Fairview Road, 518, 535. Little thing. The defendant asked Ms. McCabe to Google how long to die in the cold. She did so at 6:23 and 6:24 in the morning. You have the testimony of Ms. Hyde and Mr. Whitford as to SQLite databases, plist databases, knowledge C databases, state DB tabs, as far as all of that. Also from Trooper Marino as well. These searches were unequivocally done at 6:23 and 6:24 in the morning, and not at 2:27 and 40 seconds in the morning. They were not deleted by a user. That is not what deleted means. Frankly, Mr. Green, the last question that I asked Mr. Green is, was he aware that Cellbrite, and by Cellbrite, the person who designed that being Mr. Whiffen, had to alter exactly how their software worked because of people like Mr. Green misinterpreting the data as he did in this case. And what did Mr. Green say? Yes. But those questions, as far as how long to die in the cold, I would submit mirror the questions that the defendant asked Firefighter Whitley in the back of the ambulance, if you recall those. She asked Firefighter Whitley how long to die in the cold without a jacket. She knew how Mr. O'Keefe was dressed. She knew when she left him to die in the cold how he was dressed. The defendant made statements to Firefighter Becker that the last time that she saw Mr. O'Keefe, they were in an argument. Again, in the back of the same ambulance as Firefighter Whitley. You have testimony from Firefighter Woodbury. Same kind of questions. If Mr. O'Keefe could be alive without a jacket. You have the testimony from each of these firefighters as to sort of the vacillating emotional state of the defendant that morning. What you have in the testimony from Firefighter Woodbury is that despite all that, there were no tears that he observed from the defendant at that time. What each of those first responders indicate is that the defendant repeatedly stated, is he dead, is he dead? Not, is he okay, is he going to be okay, how is he? Any sort of questions about the medical condition. Is he dead? That phraseology repeated over and over and over again. And when you take into juxtaposition that phraseology. Text to Laura Sullivan, found him in the snow at 5 a.m. The unaccounted for time heading in the direction of 34 Fairview Road, 518 to 535. The repeated questioning of Firefighter Whitney, Firefighter Woodbury, asking Miss McCabe to look up those things in her phone. She's looking for confirmation, is what she's looking for, when she asks over and over again, is he dead, is he dead, is he dead? You have the testimony that you heard from Miss McCabe and Miss Roberts. I say them together because, as far as these two women were concerned, they did not know each other, really at all. The only time, as they both testified to, that they had ever spent appreciably together prior to January 29th, 2022, is when Mr. O'Keefe nicely took them out for sneakers because he had some sort of deal at a Reebok outlet or something like that to sort of try to pay them back for the help that they provided him and the children. Jennifer with respect to the niece and Kerry with respect to the nephew. But they're both contacted by the defendant in the early morning of January 29th. As Ms. McCabe testified, John was my friend. I love John, he was an amazing guy. At the waterfall, Mr. Albert said going home to have a drink with his son, Brian Jr., if anyone wants to come. Open invitation to the table. She said to Mr. O'Keefe and the defendant, you guys should come. Both the defendant and the victim indicated that they wanted to come and that they were coming. She describes the phone calls and the text messages that she receives from Mr. O'Keefe, that she's providing directions. She indicates she's providing them directions to go down Chapman. She describes how that is. And you've heard this testimony from a couple of different witnesses as far as the steepness as you're going down Chapman, going down Fairview of coming off of Chapman, that you first go down a big steep hill. It flattens out for a little bit and then you go down a second, two hills going down on Chapman. Matching the GPS native location and the health data as far as where the Mr. O'Keefe's phone is, a half mile away from 34 Fairview Road at the time that his health data is reporting that he's ascending or descending three flights of stairs. You hear the testimony from Ms. McCabe as far as the last time that she spoke to Mr. O'Keefe. And she's still trying to provide directions to Fairview because Mr. O'Keefe has never been there before and neither has a defendant, which is further corroborated in Trooper Guarino's testimony as far as the vehicle passing by Fairview and then coming back in on the other side, having to reverse direction. But she's giving directions and she indicates that she uses a house that Mr. O'Keefe will be familiar with, that belonging to Bella or Bella's mom. Bella's mom is an ex-girlfriend for a short period of time from a long time ago. However, in the defendant's mind, it's so prescient on her mind that she's still talking about it the next morning or later on that morning when she's riding, going towards Fairview Road with Miss Roberts and Miss McCabe in Miss Roberts' car. She's still talking about that at that time. It's that much on her mind. Miss McCabe indicated that she looked out and she saw the vehicle initially in front of the front door, as did Mr. McCabe, as did Brian Albert Jr., as did Julie Nagel, as did Ryan Nagel, and the vehicle moved up several times or several spots to where it was then positioned. Initially at some point in front of the door, then it moves up further so that it's in the area of the fire hydrant and the flagpole where Mr. O'Keefe's body was discovered later on that morning, at least by Ms. McCabe and Ms. Roberts, and then moves up further beyond that. And I say that in the sense of it moves up further beyond that with sufficient distance for it to then go in reverse for 62 and a half feet at 24.2 miles per hour, striking Mr. O'Keefe and leaving him where he was found later on the 29th. Again, the testimony from Ms. McCabe that about 12:40 when she's texting him, she indicated in her testimony she couldn't be certain if Mr. O'Keefe was still out front or had left at that point. She wakes up to a phone call from John's niece Kaylee at 4:53 in the morning. This is from an 8th grader, 14-year-old girl. That's why she answers the phone at 4:53 in the morning. She then hears the defendant screaming loudly over and over again, Jen, Jen, Jen. John didn't come home, got in a fight, left him at the waterfall. The variations, the different iterations of that story as it evolves and changes over the course of that morning. Ms. McCabe then indicates to the defendant, we saw you outside of my sister's house. Then she starts yelling, Jan, did I hit him? Could I hit him? Then they start discussing, or the defendant brings up her cracked tail. And then both Ms. McCabe and Mr. McCabe hear the defendant screaming outside of their home at about 5 o'clock in the morning, or shortly after 5 o'clock in the morning. They go to Mr. O'Keefe's house. And both Ms. McCabe and Ms. Roberts indicates, and you heard this testimony from a number of different witnesses, friends and family of Mr. O'Keefe, that he had a rule, pretty strict rule in his house as far as you take your shoes off when you come in the house. And so what did Ms. McCabe and Ms. Roberts both do when they're entering in that house on January 29th? They take off their boots, they come out in the snow, they take off their boots in the mudroom, and then they walk in. What did they both indicate that the defendant did that morning when she came back to the house? Walked right in with the shoes. You hear that second voicemail. It's after the defendant's arrived back at One Meadows Ave, after her phone is reconnected with Mr. O'Keefe's Wi-Fi. And you can hear the footsteps. Part of that may be in the garage, part of that might be in the house. Why is it that the defendant has no issue with wearing shoes in the house when Mr. O'Keefe has that strict rule? Because she knows where he is. She knows it's not an issue, he's not coming home, because she hit him with her SUV and she left him in the snow. Ms. Roberts and Ms. McCabe frantically sort of running around the house looking for Mr. O'Keefe. Defendant's not. They then get in the vehicle. They drive back towards Fairview Road. And again, the defendant from the back seat of the vehicle immediately sees the defendant, starts pulling and kicking on the door, and runs in sort of a beeline straight over to where Mr. O'Keefe is laying on the front lawn. You have the testimony from Ms. Roberts as far as John's phone. John's phone, when the firefighters pick him up, and you recall several witnesses testifying about that, pick him up on the scoop stretcher and they bring him over to the ambulance while they're conducting the resuscitative efforts trying to save Mr. O'Keefe's life. But Ms. Roberts indicated that she observed underneath it, only the phone, but the phone on the grass. On the grass in the area that is completely covered in snow in every other area except under Mr. O'Keefe, which I would submit indicates how long Mr. O'Keefe has been there. Now recall, around 12 o'clock or so is when it starts to snow and it starts to stick a little bit. And you heard all that testimony. And I know it was a lot of testimony about snow, and a lot of testimony about weather, but there's a purpose to that. There's a point to that, okay? As far as the grass underneath Mr. O'Keefe's body, where his cell phone was, and Ms. Roberts observed some 6 hours later after it starts snowing, is still visible only under Mr. O'Keefe where his body is, which I would submit as evidence to you as to how long he's been there. Now, on top of that, you also have hours of ring videos of the driveway as far as shoveling and Paul O'Keefe and other people snow blowing and shoveling and all those kinds of things. There's a purpose to that as well. If you look at those, if you look at the video of the defendant crashing into Mr. O'Keefe's vehicle at a speed of anywhere from 0 to 5, which even Dr. Wolf would indicate would not cause the damage to the taillight that was observed in this case. You know what you don't see? You don't see snow move off Mr. O'Keefe's vehicle when they come into contact. You don't see any red or clear plastic pieces in the snow. And if you look at those stills, not the ones that counsel put up there during his closing, but if you look at each of the video in the stills, you can see the damage consistent with the taillight at each and every point. You see the damage consistent with the taillight from the 507 video. You see the damage consistent from the 822 video, from Lieutenant Ray, from the cruiser camera video, when he's pulling into the driveway. You see the damage consistent from the Dighton video at the defendant's home. You see the damage consistent from the right here, February 1st, 2022, when the search warrant is conducted and Ms. Hartnett removes all those pieces from the vehicle. The weather is also important when it comes to the hair. The magic hair, as Mr. Jackson likes to call it. See, the magic hair was actually frozen to the vehicle, as was the glass to the bumper, because the vehicle looked like that on the left. when it was caked in snow, when Officer Barrow saw it in the driveway in Dighton as they were wading through a foot and a half of snow walking up, because remember, they didn't even pull into the driveway because they had to have someone come down and plow it before they could get into it. That's what the vehicle looked like. What you can see, however, is the damage to the taillight, to the side of that taillight, consistent with it. So that hair, that 7/8 of an inch hair, was frozen to the side. And as you remember, the testimony from Sergeant Buchanan about the heated condition of the Canton Police Department garage, and that's one of the reasons that they took it there, because the other barracks that they could have taken it to didn't have that heated condition. So yes, after it's been in there from January 29th at about 5:30 p.m. until February 1st when they conduct the search warrant, the hair isn't still frozen as it's contained within a heated garage, and the pieces of glass on the rear bumper have melted. The snow has melted, as you can see from left to right. The weather, also important, I would submit, weather was a weapon. Remember, the cause of death here is not just blunt impact injuries, it's blunt impact injuries and hypothermia. You heard all that medical testimony in relation to it, and you heard all that testimony in relation to the snow and the weather and the wind. Wind gusts up to 37 miles per hour while he's out, Mr. O'Keefe is out there in just a shirt and jeans. Now, you heard also testimony from Ms. Roberts in relation to the injuries she observed to Mr. O'Keefe, that initially on scene, there was one eye that was swollen, not the other. Submit that's indication of the swelling that Dr. Scortibella was testifying to, and no indication of physical altercation. And then both eyes being swollen when Ms. Roberts viewed Mr. O'Keefe's body after his passing at the Good Samaritan. Submit that all the testimony tells you the same consistent account, internally, externally, from civilian testimony to investigator testimony to medical testimony to forensic testimony to the reconstruction testimony. You have the testimony from Ms. McCabe and Ms. Roberts that they couldn't see Mr. O'Keefe at Fairview when they initially pulled up. You can see that from Officer Sarah's cruiser. You have Mr. O'Keefe being covered in snow from the storm. You know where Mr. O'Keefe's body was. It's clearly visible on the cruiser camera from Officer Sarah. You have the testimony from each of the responding officers, anywhere from 5 to 12 feet off the roadway, and from the civilians as well. Ms. McCabe, Ms. Roberts, Officer Mullaney has 6 inches of snow on Mr. O'Keefe when he first sees him. Firefighter Kelly says that he couldn't even see Mr. O'Keefe until he was 5 feet away, in the darkness, in the snow, in the blizzard conditions. There's no footprints around the body. There's no drag marks around the body. There's no evidence of anything in relation to Brian Albert and Brian Higgins. Brian Albert and Brian Higgins spent January 28, 2022, traveling to New York City to go to a funeral for another police officer, for another department, who they didn't even know. Traveled all the way down to New York and then came back before the blizzard, only to come back from that to go out drinking, to come back to Mr. Albert's house, to then murder another police officer who they did know, who worked for the same department as them. And then criminal mastermind genius that Brian Albert is, 28 years on the Boston Police Department, he's then going to just leave Mr. O'Keefe's body on his front lawn? Really? That's the conspiracy? What evidence do you have of that? You have statements that the defendant made to Sergeant Buchanan on January 29th. She was willing to speak, but didn't want to give too much detail. Conversational tone throughout. She indicated that the night before, they had gotten into an argument, something about what was fed to the children, nothing about the detailed arguments and incessant phone calls and everything else that you saw from the defendant and Mr. O'Keefe's phone on the 28th. She indicated that she got to CF McCarthy's around 9 p.m., started drinking vodka sodas, the men were drinking beers. When asked where she parked her vehicle, she said she parked on Washington Street across from CF McCarthy's, facing northbound on the same side as Waterfall. Same testimony that you heard from Ms. Colakithis, observing the defendant going over to her vehicle, getting in the driver's seat, and the victim, Mr. O'Keefe, getting into the passenger's seat. She said they were left the Waterfall, were invited to a residence. She drove her and John to the location in Canton. She dropped Mr. O'Keefe off, did not see him walking in the home. She, being the defendant, stated she made a three-point turn and then left. When asked about the damage to her vehicle, she indicated to the troopers, "I don't know, it happened last night." June 2022, you have that other reporting of that other version that she now has evolved into as far as stating to Sergeant Buchanan, are you aware that John was beaten up by Brian and Colin Albert? We're all in on the same joke, right? John was pulverized and my taillight was cracked. What evidence do you have of that? Mr. O'Keefe never went in the house. You have testimony from Nicole Albert, Brian Albert, Jennifer McCabe, Matthew McCabe, Caitlin Albert, Brian Albert Jr., Sarah Levinson, Julie Nagel, all indicating never went in the house. John O'Keefe's phone never went in the house from the testimony and the data points that you have from Trooper Guarino. You know how Mr. O'Keefe was dressed and you know the defendant knew that. You have the testimony from Kurt Roberts, Jennifer McCabe, Matthew McCabe, Karina Kolokithis, Nicholas Kolokithis, Brian Albert, Nicole Albert, Brian Higgins, all indicated in their testimony and the defendant knew, based on our questions to the firefighters the next morning, that Mr. O'Keefe was not dressed for the weather when he left the waterfall. The weather was a weapon. You have the testimony about the car, the defendant's car being there in front of the house, moving multiple times. You have that from multiple sources. You have that from Matthew McCabe. You have that from Jennifer McCabe. You have that from Brian Albert Jr. You have that from Julie Nagel. You have that from Ryan Nagel. You have the testimony of Ryan Nagel, Ricky D'Antonio, and Heather Maxson. Ms. Maxson indicated she saw a male passenger, female operator, as the vehicle was turning. So remember, they're coming towards Fairview at the same time. The defendant, after conducting that reverse, a three-point turn on Cedar Crest, is then taking a right onto Fairview, while Mr. Nagel, Mr. D'Antonio, and Ms. Maxson are taking a left onto Fairview. Mr. Nagel indicates that Mr. D'Antonio then flashes lights. During that time, Ms. Maxson can see inside the vehicle. She sees a male passenger. She sees a female operator. They follow the vehicle as they're turning onto the street. Lo and behold, they're going to the same residence. They park. There's nothing in between them and the defendant's vehicle. They indicate that at no time do they see anybody get out of the vehicle. At no time do they see any damage to the vehicle, because or it hasn't happened yet. At no time do they see anyone leave the vehicle and go into the house. The vehicle moves up on different successive occasions, as testified to by Mr. Nagel and several others. And then as they're passing that vehicle, Mr. Nagel indicates that he sees a female operator in the vehicle with the dome light on. Interesting, when I asked Mr. Nagel as far as when Julie Nagel came out to the vehicle, did he roll down the window or did he open the door? He indicated he opened the door. And I asked him, what happened when you open the door? What happens when you open the door to a vehicle? The dome light comes on. So there's a reason I would submit, or the inference that you can make, is that no one sees Mr. O'Keefe in the vehicle because that's the moment he steps out of the vehicle. And then they're gone. And Nagel's, Ryan Nagel, Ricky D'Antonio, and Heather Maxson drive away from that. We hear the testimony from Julie Nagel and Sarah Levinson, the peanut butter and jelly sandwich conversation they have with Ms. McCabe, which while they're pulling away from the house where everybody's attention is drawn, Ms. McCabe is turned around facing both of them in the backseat. Ms. Nagel is facing Ms. Levinson on the passenger side, looking out the window towards 34 Fairview Road. Ms. Levinson is looking back at Ms. Nagel away from that area, in which Ms. Nagel indicates that she sees a 5 to 6 foot dark blob on the lawn near the pole and the hydrant, which is just where Mr. O'Keefe is discovered the next morning. You have the testimony recalled, and you have text messages in regard to Colin Albert when he gets picked up from
Mr. Lally, 5 minutes.
Yes, sir. Colin Albert, Ms. Allison McKay, Brian Albert, Nicole Albert, Caitlin Albert, Brian Jr., all indicating that he was picked up around that time at 12:10 a.m. We have the testimony from Chris and Julie Albert, his parents, as far as when he comes home, kisses them goodnight before he goes to bed. You have that testimony in regard to Chris Albert, as far as how John O'Keefe and the defendant come to be at the waterfall in the first place, as far as John O'Keefe and his nephew coming in earlier in the day, getting a couple slices of pizza, what are you doing later on, contained within those text messages. You have the testimony from Lieutenant O'Hara, Lieutenant Tully, Sergeant Mechanic about those items being recovered. And in particular, the items being recovered on January 29th by that search. What did Lieutenant O'Hara say? The items were found close to the curb. The items were at ground level, 3 feet of snow that they had to sift through in order to find those particular things. The detail or the delay in the recovery of evidence. The photos in the video, most of which you have in evidence, is earlier in the storm. This is before the 18 inches of snow falls down, before there's drifts and 3 feet of snow in places. They found the evidence where it had been, at that same ground level, in the grass, under the snow, at 34 Fairview Road. We heard all of the medical testimony, which I would submit is consistent, from firefighter Formati to Dr. Rice. You heard the testimony regarding the defendant's blood alcohol concentration for Dr. Fowler and Nick Roberts, 93 milligrams per deciliter, 0.07 to 0.08% at 9:08 in the morning. You heard it, Mr. Roberts' testimony in regard to the retrograde extrapolation, 0.13 to 0.29, extrapolating back to the time of the operation. The defendant admits to drinking vodka. It's on the receipts from C.F. McCarthy's and from the waterfall, and you have the witness testimony in the surveillance video in regard to that. The forensic testimony that you have. In regard to the medical testimony, you have the sort of pattern abrasions, clear plastic that's recovered by Lieutenant O'Hara and Lieutenant Tully on January 29th. The clear plastic that has the dimples on it. No one, not Trooper Paul, not anyone at any point in time ever said that Mr. O'Keefe's arm was out like this at the time that he struck and that he did a pirouette and then flew 30 feet in the air. 12 inches of abrasions that the doctors were, the biomechanical people were talking about yesterday, 12 inches and then 6 inches for the tail end, is easily solved by this. And the dimples on his arm are, that I would submit are consistent with the dimples on the taillight cover piece, are right around this area of the elbow. You have the testimony in regard to forensics, as far as Mr. Porto, Mr. Bradford. John O'Keefe's DNA is on that taillight housing, on the housing. His DNA is there, to the exclusion as well of Sergeant Mechanic and Trooper Crocker. Mr. O'Keefe's DNA is on the exterior of the broken drinking glass. Mr. O'Keefe's DNA, and only Mr. O'Keefe's DNA, is on his clothing and his fingernails, consistent with Dr. Scortibello's testimony that there is no evidence of a fight or an altercation. There's no one else's DNA under his fingernails. There's no one else's DNA on his clothing. You have the testimony from Ms. Hartman, Trooper Paul, as regard to the damage that they observed, the dent, the scratches, the 7/8 of an inch hair. You have the testimony from Ms. Chart in regard to the mitochondrial DNA profile from that hair being consistent with the DNA profile of Mr. O'Keefe. You have the testimony from Ms. Valier and Ms. Hanley in regard to the microscopic pieces, 1/16 of an inch by 1/16.
You have 1 minute, Ms. Tulele. Wrap it up.
Yes, sir. All consistent with pieces of taillight that are found within his clothing. Ms. Gilman, if I could. 605, this is what this vehicle looks like backing up at that speed for approximately that distance. There's another, years and years ago, started practicing in Norfolk County in Braintree, what is now Quincy. I eventually became a far smarter man than myself, eventually became President of the United States. His name was John F. And whatever may be our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictates of our passions, they cannot alter the state of the facts and the evidence. What the constellation of the facts and the evidence ineluctably demonstrate here is that the defendant drove her vehicle in reverse for 24.2 miles per hour, for 62 and a half feet, struck Mr. O'Keefe, causing those catastrophic head injuries, leaving him incapacitated and freezing to death.
Ms. Tulele, I have to stop you. You've gone over. Okay?
I literally have one sentence.
One sentence I'll give you.
From that facts and that evidence, I would submit ineluctably demonstrates her guilt on each of the indictments before you, and I would ask that you find yourself. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.